Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it seems our theme song has been forgotten again. Anyway, welcome as we get ready to set things up. But as Gary says, we got to do it right. So indulge me one moment, please.
You brought two too many.
Thank you.
of the afternoon. We're still in the throes of Black Music Month and loving it. Thank you for all the great response to the shows thus far. It's time to get back on the regular grind, though, and get some editorial stuff out here as the chefs get ready to deliver, courtesy of your loving Mad Scientist, here at Soul Tree Radio and the Raw. Ow! Soul Tree Radio and Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now, at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, Radio Reggie in Richmond, Virginia, Ricky Hampton in Detroit, Ricky Hampton Sr., I forget, Big Daddy, and Ricky is also the host of the African-American Athlete Show. You can hear it on Blog Talk Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern. Rick knows his stuff. He's a great listen. Lend him your ears Tuesdays at 9 on Blog Talk. And, of course, Pat Freeman, the mighty Oba, may his tribe increase. Do the do up in Western New York. WUFO AM, 1480, that is, and 96.5 Power FM with the number one sports show in the nation. Of course, the rest of the chefs will pile in here in this abridged version as we have a special event to attend to. But with a couple of issues that we definitely wanted to get out the way. As with me, as always, almost 1,000 shows now, the bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Gray. What up, Jay?
DK in the dirty, DK in the dirty, hey!
I'm feeling you.
Before we continue this conversation, we gotta do our thing.
Yes, sir.
Almost two decades, the Black Athlete Sports Network has served as the definitive source for information about the black athlete. Whether it be historical or analytical, BASN has always celebrated the contributions of sport's most innovative and unique being, the black athlete. In 2016, as we relaunch blackathlete.com, look for more of the same from our unique set of writers and historians. We have been and always will be the soul of sports. We are BASN.
We are BASN.
You got that right. Yes, sir.
The New Jersey Devils have just got out of the basement.
Uh-oh.
With the trade of B.J. Zubon from the Nashville Predators.
Wow.
I'm surprised the Predators did this. I'm surprised because the Predators had a very solid team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised because they were in the playoffs.
Yep.
I'm surprised that a dynamic defensive scorer Steve Nashville. What is going on with them?
That's a good question, bro. And you know, I don't think that the real truth of all of this will come out. You know? Now, Subban has always been an offensive defenseman. And I mean offensive and not offensive. And because of this, you got to know that he brings a lot to the table. And apparently, a lot still bothers folks about who he is and how he does what he does.
Yeah.
And I'm upset because if he should have went anyway, he should have went to my Fly Guys. But that's another story. You know, and
Michael, looking at the draft choices too.
Mm-hmm.
Jersey drafted Jack Hughes, number one.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is a very quick center, right?
Mm-hmm.
The New York Rangers drafted Kivka from Finland.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, that puts New Jersey and New York revive the old, because that division was almost dead. It was a dead division.
Oh, yeah. So, on top of everything else, when Subban signed that big-ass contract, which was 8 years and $72 million U.S.,
oh,
in Montreal,
yeah,
back in 2014, that deal,
yeah,
had a no-movement. That deal had a no-movement clause, G. But, you know, he got dealt in Nashville in 2016 for Shea Weber before the,
yeah,
stipulation kicked in. Now, what's intriguing is that the Predators chose not to honor the no-movement clause in Subban's contract once he became their property. And
wow,
let's be real. P.K. Subban is 30 years old now, you know.
Right.
And he helped wake up a fan base in Nashville. We can honestly say that.
Yeah.
There's no question, as great as Pecorino is, as great as some of the defense people there in that core were, and they had a strong defensive core. But as great as all of that, PK gave Nashville the kind of positive visibility that they needed.
Yes, yes.
And they stabilized that franchise in the Mid-South. Let's,
yep,
remember, we're talking hockey here. You know,
yep,
hockey,
yep,
and the Mid-South ain't supposed to compute. So that PK did what he did, he should not, he won't get the credit for it, we know that, but he helped build that fan base. And now he's going to play. And I think it'd be really interesting, G, if the Devils went back to that left wing lock system. Because somebody like PK.
We'll go back to that again.
Yeah. I think somebody like PK would flourish in that.
He would be a superstar.
Yeah.
I think the NHL behind this. Because you had, okay, now think about this. Last playoffs, right? Last year's playoffs, the Flyers were out,
yep,
the Devils were out, and the Rangers were out, right?
Yeah, there's some meat in that.
That whole corridor was out, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go in the playoffs with nobody with that corridor, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You got a problem. You got a money,
right,
problem, because nobody won the games from Pennsylvania all the way up to New York.
Well, you know, you're right. It's funny you say that, because when I'm on the train, and sometimes I'm taking the train into New York to do gigs, especially during the fall, during hockey season, you know, you never fail to see the number of Devils jerseys and Rangers jerseys. Very rarely will I see an Islander jersey in that corridor, but you get my point. Now, with Subban coming here into New Jersey, it's going to be a whole different approach. Not that the front office will take, but that the fan base will take. Because PK would get out on the ice and you'd hear people going, boo. And the boos, but you know the boos were half, you know, we respect this guy, we don't like him because he's good. And the other half of boos were, we don't want this black motherfucker to succeed. And you know it's the truth.
Yeah,
you know it's the truth. What are you doing playing a white man's game? You know, this is stupid shit. I remember when Donald Brashear was playing for the Montreal Canadiens, and that asshole, Jacques Demers, had the nerve to say he's playing a white man's game. Clearly, he hasn't had a discussion with our friends George or Daryl Frosty, because he would know that black people have been playing hockey since the 18th fucking 80s. But that's not the point. When Brashear But when Brashear got dealt and he had the opportunity to play against Montreal, all of a sudden everybody bitched up. He didn't get the people that he wanted to get, but everybody knew that Brashear could fight, obviously, and that if Demers had a jersey on, he should have beat the shit out of his ass down to the white meat. But having said all of that, you know, this reminds me of the scene in North Dallas 40. Now, if you remember, they just lost the game. And John Matuszak's character is pissed. And one of the coaches is trying to be a little toady and saying, "Well, you didn't understand the tendencies." He's like, "Fuck tendencies. I want to play football." And as the guy is trying to make logic his argument, Matuszak is all in his ass. And he says, "Every time you call it a game, every time I say it's a game, you say it's a business. And every time I say it's a business, you say it's a game." And basically, he espouses the frustration that many people who play sports for a living professionally have to deal with. Now, there's an aspect of business, and I'm glad we'll come back to hockey, but you set this up perfectly, because I was thinking about the women's soccer title, or the Women's World Cup for
man.
Soccer.
By who?
Mm-hmm.
On the West Coast, we had two players. We had two, one from Stanford, one from Cal on the team, right?
Right, mm-hmm.
And these guys are going to lose their minds over this team. They're going to lose their minds over this team.
Mm-hmm.
And, now I get to the point where I hope they get beat. I know
exactly what you're talking about. But as we were talking about soccer here, we know when it comes to the men's game, there are some things that haven't infected the women's game yet, but there's shit we need to talk about, because they tie into all of the stuff that you just brought up. And please indulge me for the next 4 minutes.
For allegedly hurling a racial slur at an opposing player.
And even occasionally hung an effigy.
Monkey chants and people spitting at me when I was taking a throw-in or a corner kick.
Soccer and racism unfortunately go hand in hand. The entanglement of a game so beautiful and the motives of those attending so disastrous. In their match against Newcastle this past year, Palace's Wilfred Zaha was fouled in the box by American DeAndre Yedlin and awarded a penalty. Palace won 1-0. Afterwards, the slurs poured in, and Zaha had enough, exposing the cult-like bigots on social media. He revealed to getting a million abusive messages on social media and even death threats.
It's best to draw attention to it now, so the people will get drawn out themselves, because I feel like it's not okay for you to just go on social media and feel like you can say whatever you like.
But it doesn't just stop there. Thierry Henry is one of the greatest strikers ever. He experienced it all, including institutionalized racism. Luis Aragonés, then coach of the French national team, racially abused Henry to fellow players on the team. In Stadia, it seems nothing is off limits. Black players routinely have bananas thrown at them, like even the great Brazilian legend Roberto Carlos. Albeit Danny Alves owned the moment, a banana was thrown at him as he was taking a corner for Barcelona. The top comment, trolling a troll at its finest. However, this is rarely the case. Auschwitz is your homeland. The ovens are your home, displayed one banner for club Lazio in Italy. One player, Paolo Di Canio, Nazi saluted his xenophobic fascist supporters. In Verona, the imagery was heartbreaking. Jim Crow-like hate in modern times. Monkey chants echo throughout the stadium when black players are on the ball, like Juventus's Moise Kean.
Great ball to the far post. It's quite a plate for him. Never, ever. Moise Kean going to miss from there.
Players are not viewed as countrymen, as Zaha explains. Nearly every game I'm called a monkey or a N-word or a whatever, he says, depressingly. I don't know if we're animals to them or whatever, he says. Why is this okay? Why are you saying these things right next to your 5-year-old kid? And then when you leave, what, you're back to being a normal dad? Working a normal job? Eerily similar to Draymond Green commenting on the racist Utah Jazz fan who abused Russell Westbrook.
I guess it's just the nature of what we do, I guess. I don't really understand why grown men get off by coming in to someone else's job and, you know, fan. Bullshit.
Admittedly, Zaha says he's spoken to a life coach. With football, you get to a point where you start to think, do I still love it, or am I doing it as a job? The life coach has helped to reawaken certain things. It's why Raheem Sterling, at just 24 years old, has had enough and take an action. I don't want the next generation of black players to have to put up with this evil. The problem continues, and the sanctioning bodies of soccer, specifically FIFA, which generates over $4.5 billion a year, must up the ante. For an authority that is so powerful, rulers of an entire sport, are they really making changes for the betterment of their players that comes from every country in the world, or are they blindly turning the other cheek, empowering through limited action via slap on the wrist fines and the sporadic empty stadium games? Bracelets are passed out. Promos are aired on TV. The players are leading the fight. Why doesn't FIFA?
Now, that came from the Young Turks Sports. And the Turks do good work, but this one was a little incomplete because the person who was passing on this little four minutes of information got one glaringly wrong thing here. And I know what it's like when you're trying to get information out there. I've done it myself, so we endeavor to try to get it right. But Luis Aragonés was the manager for the Spanish team. He was not the manager for the French team, you dumb fuck. And it was Aragonés who said, in regards to trying to inspire one of his players to mark against Thierry Henry, that don't let that black piece of shit beat you. Those were his words. Spanish, English, it doesn't matter. That's what the fuck he said. And unfortunately, you know, there's no desire to get it right on the part of this guy who did it, because he's an American talking about soccer, and most of the time, most Americans, unless they've been versed in the sport, don't get it right when they're talking about the world's most popular sport. But I digress. But to go where we started with this, G, this is a classic example of resentment that athletes deal with in the workplace. You know, you brought up PK. If PK were white, think about what they would say about him. Oh, that's what I'm saying. But think about what they'd say about him. He's amazing. He's flashy. You know, he's a complete player. He has the intangibles that is needed to be successful. You know, PK carried Montreal when they didn't have anything. He was their star, and he made an average team a good team. He made them a playoff team, and he should have won the captaincy, but the stupid Quebecois were so racist in delaying that and denying that, that their own racism ended up costing their own demise, as Max Pacioretty and others spoke out loudly and overtly about their resentment of Subban. And I'm going back with this because it's important for people to understand where this shit started. He donates $10 million of his own money to a children's hospital in Montreal. Yep. And Quebec loved him for it, except for his teammates, who try to say he was selfish. How the fuck can you be selfish when you donated $10 million of your own money to a fucking charity?
Man,
and then to punctuate it, as each team in the NFL and other leagues has their own Man of the Year ceremony where one person is picked, you would have thought after that $10 million donation, it would have been a slam dunk that Subban would have been selected. They chose, and I'm talking about his teammates, they chose Pacioretty. And Pacioretty, the scumbag that he is, and I'm saying this because when he got traded to Vegas, I was wondering how PK's brother was going to handle that. And I'm glad that they did not win the Stanley Cup, because you're fucked up on that. Bottom line in all of this, when someone does good works and somebody doesn't like them because of how they present themselves, this is no different than Nolan Nowacki calling Cam Newton a look at me, blah, 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 wants to be the center of attention. All this other bullshit that has nothing to do with the fact that he is an amazing athlete and an amazing football player, just like PK is a hockey player. And apparently there were some offers from Canadian teams for PK, but the Devils won. So you looking at this with your hockey GM hat on, G, what do you think? And how do you think the Devils are going to fare now that they've gone this far?
Well, I think number one, they'll be out of the basement. As a matter of fact, they'll be out of the basement.
No question. Yep.
They could even be they could be this year's next year's St. Louis Blues. This is about sports.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a player that uplifts you, that motivates you, that encourages you,
yep,
your whole team becomes better.
That's right. That's exactly
That's what
right.
happened with Nashville. Nashville was an average team.
Thank you.
They were an average team.
Mm-hmm.
Again, going to the playoffs and almost win the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, New Jersey is a bad, they're an awful team.
Yep.
Because they're very young. They're a very young
That's
team.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Now, they finally have a veteran there that
mm-hmm.
can say, kids, this is
yep.
what we're going to do. This is how we're going to
mm-hmm.
do it. Mm-hmm. And they will listen to him. I hope they listen to him.
Yep.
And they will be a much better team.
I'm thinking I got to get a Devils jersey now. I love my Fly Guys. But I've been a P.K. Subban fan from day one. And I know what he brings to the table. And if the Devils can get their due by what P.K. brings to the table, I say have at it. Because it'll make hockey a lot more interesting here, knowing that he's going to face my Fly Guys X number of times a season.
Yep.
And he'll raise hell in New York with the Rangers.
Michael, do you want my red jersey? Do you want my white jersey?
I want a red one. I want a red Devil jersey, baby. That's right. That's right. Because, listen, this is where it's at. Hockey is doing well. Let's be real. Hockey is jumped up a few notches, and this may be because he will be in a bigger media market. He's in the general New York area now. You know, the Rangers, they've got to move on after King Henrik. You know,
yeah,
they don't have too many stars to call their own right now. They're reshaping their lineup. Fly Guys, they finally have their goalie in Taylor Hart, and now they've got a rebuild. I'm hoping that they get Wayne back, but it'll be intriguing. It'll also be intriguing if somehow Wayne Simmons, who is a free agent, ends up a New Jersey Devil. So hockey has opened up some different storylines that will make for even more entertainment as they continue on. And God only knows
Michael,
what's going to happen when he comes into Madison Square Garden for the first time against the Rangers.
The NHL has become a very popular sport. Why is that? Well, it's because everybody has a chance to win the Stanley Cup. I mean,
that's exactly
everybody.
Right. You're right. No, listen, we loved the playoff hockey because we knew, as has been, this didn't just happen for years. The number one seed can get just as easily knocked the fuck out. So it's a tenuous spot to be on. You can win the President's Trophy for having the most points during the regular season, but it means nothing if you're in the playoffs and you get your ass waxed. And we saw it happen at least twice, G. Teams that we thought were going to go a long way in got wiped out by better goaltending and just better overall play. They got jacked because they were surprised at how well the teams were going to play. And the NHL benefited from this. It made it very watchable, and it was exciting because you didn't know what the hell was going to happen. When the Columbus Blue Jackets, when Blue Jack City took out the top seed,
yes,
everybody
sir.
Was shaking their heads. Seth Jones is a major star, or at least he should be. If Columbus don't know about it now, they'll find out when he's a free agent. But the bottom line was now it wasn't just PK. Seth Jones in that series controlled it. He ran the power play. He was quarterback. He set his teammates up.
He's going every game but two. He's going every game.
That's right. He sure did. And to do that as a defenseman is a big deal. So Tortorella, even though we know he can be an asshole, he knows who can play and who can't. And Seth was probably getting about 25 minutes of ice time out there while he was doing his due. And he's not like who I still think got screwed. My man, I can't remember his damn last name right now as I'm having a brain fart. But the brother who was playing in Columbus as well, the Haitian brother.
Nurse.
Nurse plays for Edmonton. No. This is the brother who's the speed demon. He came out with the Phoenix Coyotes, the Double D's, the Killer Bees. That's right, the Killer Bees. The Killer D's. Domi Dubois. There we go. Thank you. Thank you. No, Duclair. Thank you. I'm sorry. See?
Yeah.
Yes. Anthony Duclair. See, Ginkoba does work. Just took a while to kick and I had to shake my head. So Anthony Duclair was collateral damage because Tortorella is an asshole. But Seth Jones was steady as a rock. But all this goes back to coaches and front offices being uncomfortable with certain personalities. And that ferrets down to being uncomfortable with having a black player on the team. Now, Montreal wouldn't say that out loud. The fans didn't have a problem with PK, but apparently somebody in the front office did, and apparently some of his teammates did.
Michael, that leads me to my question, is that the New York Rangers are the spinning image of the New York Giants.
Sure.
I mean, by this is, you look at the Ranger history, the Ranger history.
Yep.
How many bad players the Rangers have? I think
yeah.
It's three. Is it 100 years? It's been three?
Something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, the Rangers are a carbon copy of the New York Giants.
Yeah, they are.
Football Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you're right, the way the upper management looked upon black players in New York is the same way the Giants looked upon black players.
Remember who owns the team, gang? You know, that idiot owns that team, and he has done as much damage with the Knicks. Dolan has had as much damage done with the Knicks as he had with the Rangers. You know, the Rangers don't have any kind of solid base now. And everybody had to know Lundqvist couldn't fucking goaltend forever.
He can't do it all by himself. Exactly.
So, yes, there were some things that they had to do that they should have done 3 years prior that they're starting to do now. So now they've torn the whole thing apart and they're going to start from scratch. But it doesn't change the fact that athletes, as we've said for years, when they are in their environments, that's their job. They're subject to the same bullshit that everybody else is in the corporate vein. You know, we have there's another example of this down in Tampa Bay, where Gerald McCoy, Booger McCoy, one of the best defensive tackles in all the football for a long time.
Yeah.
The only problem is that he got no love because he was playing in Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And now he's a Carolina Panther. But not before being disrespected by Bruce Arians because they implied that they could move on from him. Now, a franchise player is a franchise player. They are few and far between. And on top of it, adding insult to injury, as he's leaving, as is his right to do as a free agent, they replace McCoy with Ndamukong Suh. And I like Ndamukong Suh. But they gave him McCoy's number. And when they gave him his number, all it did was set things off in a bad direction, because you're telling this guy after years of service that he ain't shit. And you leave no recourse for the guy to say anything but. So as I'm saying this, I got the professor chomping at the bit, and I want to get his vibe on this, because now McCoy is a Panther, and I think he's going to wreak all kinds of havoc, and he gets to play Tampa Bay twice a year, which is the best revenge. Professor, can you hear me?
Yeah. What are we discussing today?
Well, we are discussing the fact that your man, Booger McCoy, is now a Carolina Panther. And you know from back in the day, if you were going to trade a player, the last thing you want to do is trade him in your division. But free agency has knocked some of that out the box. So now a player can shop his wares anywhere he wants. And I'm looking forward to the games between Carolina and Tampa Bay. And I have a feeling Jameis Winston will not be looking forward to seeing Booger McCoy across the line from him getting ready to smack the black off of his ass on that field. What's your take on this?
Well, since we're talking about lower caliber teams anyway, only one Super Bowl between the two of them. But now, looking at this from the top down, one of the things I would like to say here is, you know, we have these people who continue to talk about being the master race because they're smarter, more intellectual, and all that other yang that go with it. But then look at the dumbest stuff they do. Now, if you hear them, you know, if you listen to them, they're smarter than you.
Oh, yeah.
But then if you watch what they do, it's, you know, dumbass personified. And I think this is another one of those kind of moves, because remember, until recently, there were very few blacks in the front offices and very few blacks out clear in the decision-making process. So it's like I tell people about, you know, HBCUs. Good or bad, we did what we could do based on what we had to work with. But then you go back and look at these people now, they have much more to work with, and they still do dumb stuff. So,
there you go.
You know, and it's not just going to be Jameis Winston. What was that? Rosemont High, the movie where they had the crazy kid. The guy told these two crackheads told a star linebacker that the guy from the other team stole his car. And so he's playing middle linebacker on the other side and got the whole line and the quarterback and, you know, several other people on the other side. When he steps up to the line, they start cringing. This is going to be more along that line. But, you know, I'm at the point now where when you look at as more people in the later, you know, moving towards a millennial kind of mentality that we're dealing with here, there's no sense of tradition. There's no honor. There's no tradition. And so you can't be surprised by what you see or hear coming from these folks, because all they do, do the dots connect, and if they do, we don't care beyond that.
That's right.
And, you know, this is why we have such a problem now trying to deal with the historical aspects of anything. And then you get these, when you throw money into it, you start seeing an even worse picture pushed out here for us to, quote, love and understand, because it's worse than the old-fashioned, what have you done for me lately? And then you look at the fact that they traded. They had what, six other options,
yep.
seven other options.
But then they still trade within their own division. Yep. It's stupid that you would go in house like that, but it's even more stupid when you're going to disrespect the guy and say that he is not playing up the stuff or whatever the hell it is, when nothing's further from the truth. McCoy was a six-time Pro Bowler. Was their best player on a lousy fucking team. And then to make it even worse, when the new regime comes in, and this is according to McCoy, they didn't even sit down with him to let him know what time it was. And that's the ultimate insult. Because normally, if you're in a new situation like that, this is no different than a new job situation where you want to meet your key employee and say, this is what's going on, blah, 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 blah. This is what I'm expecting from you. You know, go get them, and I will appreciate your energy and help us to get back to where we are, all that stuff. And none of those things were done with McCoy. So the insult right there is immediate that they didn't think enough of him to even consider what he had done for the organization. And then to make it even worse, they would compound that by just pretending that it didn't happen and they turn his number over to another player. Now, I don't know how many numbers the Bucks and Radio Reggie's in the mix, how many numbers the Bucks have retired, but I got to think Derrick Brooks is one, that's 55. Of course, Doug, I hope they did Doug, because that would be really fucked up if they didn't. Probably John Lynch, because you got to have a white boy in there and all that old nonsense. So it ain't that many. And Gerald McCoy's number should never have been put on. This is an extension of that O.J. Simpson madness. Reggie, can you hear us?
Can you hear me okay, family?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we hear you.
To the Deacon for the Sense of Justice, thank you for all that you do. I apologize for coming in late, so please update me on what's going on, because I don't want to come in and ask you like Dr. Ben Carson all mouth in the land.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that would be, you know, when we look at these people that are making these decisions and making these kind of decisions, you can only go so far, you know, using these flimsy excuses they like to throw out there. At some point in time, somebody got to get a set man up, or whatever you want to call it. Because it's getting more and more asinine, you know.
Yeah.
I'm so glad basketball season is finally over, because I've been sick and tired for a long time about these arguments about who's the GOAT, who's this and who's that and the other. And you know, I go back to the now deceased Will Chamberlain, who made a comment. And all Bill Russell said was, But Chamberlain explained not only how lousy most of the modern era post players are, you know, the first thing he talked about was the work ethic and lack of skills. And, you know,
Professor, I want to tell something at you real quick. Now, just kind of on the vein of what we're talking about with basketball, but permission, Mike, to not necessarily change the subject, but I want to pick the professor's brain real quick for 2 minutes. Now, we know that when it comes to sports and reparations, and I said that not being flippant. Now, a lot of people see the system, this won't touch you, Professor Scott, I'm serious about the question I'm asking you. When we see the system in play when it comes to these players, we see that they are the workers, and of course management make the money, make the big deals, and they get the fruits of the labor. But when we see case in point, when it comes to people asking for reparations, number one, we got too many mouths in the fire running their mouths. We don't have a cohesive group out there trying to narrow it down so everybody can be on the same page. That's why I give Republicans credit. They might have the mouths going, but guess what? When they go in that back room, they have designated hitters out there to get their talking points. That's number one. Number two, Professor, when it comes to reparations, if you look at the system of oppression of this country, how they made so much money off of the cotton industry back in the 1800s, that was probably a billion-dollar industry back then, which is unreal. And now that old one is coming through. So if I had an argument about reparations, would my argument be, in your opinion, flawed, or would it be about the system of oppression in this country and put black people in? That's why we asked for reparations. Your thoughts on that?
Well, in the words of one Ronald Reagan, well, you know, really,
I love it.
You see one form of reparation going on when it comes to the whole sports kind of thing, because all these years, we thought you needed a college education and you need to stay in college long enough to learn the game and all this kind of stuff. But now they're taking kids who are barely out of the cradle and throwing them in the NBA and say, hey, here's a whole lot of money. Come get it.
Mm-hmm.
And you see all the, you know, think about it. You see a kid, who was his name? Johnson from Carolina, who actually got drafted. And the knock against him was he's been here 4 years, so he must not be that good. So it's more divide and conquer, and it's also more along the lines of we're gonna keep these smoke and mirrors up there, so you don't know which way is up. So you're telling kids who stay in school 4 years in other disciplines that they, you know, not only are they no good, they don't deserve money or don't deserve to get paid because, hey, you can't shoot a ball, you can't dunk a ball, you can't run a ball, you can't catch a ball, you can't catch nobody running or catching a ball. So this is where, you know, because this is where we see the economy booming. But what they don't tell you is you get somebody like, not to what a name, like Boris. Boris went to Winston-Salem State along with Stephen A. Monty Ross was in school. They were all on the same team. And granted, Stephen A. has done pretty well to get a kid who came to school with knees too bad to play. But then from that era, if you look at all the ball players from Winston, well, just say from the CI, from HBCUs in general, Stephen A. has probably made almost as much money as most of them put together. Then you take these other guys out there and look at Boris. Boris has been in the NBA for 20-plus years.
And so, I ain't mad at him. I mean, he did it that way. I ain't mad at him. I just want to say that. I ain't mad at him.
Go to a school that didn't have a journalism program, became a journalist of that stature. Love him or lump him. But you think of what this young man was able to do by getting an education. Look at what Boris, look at what Monty, both of them have made millions, one in the NBA, one in college coaching. And guess what? They all got degrees, which tells you that, we have people out there who are more willing to support the star system than the sky system. And
yeah,
so
but we know why, Fred.
We know why
they're supporting the star system. Because it's about individual as opposed to team. You know, they want those individuals for their own selfish purposes. And they don't care that somebody could have the type of state. They'll say that they want someone that will be the fulcrum of a team concept. But they're lying out their ass because they couldn't have that. If black people succeeded that, because they know they've succeeded at every level, if black people succeed at the very, very top and take it all the way down, they don't want that. There's always going to be this right mentality of, we know better, our water's wetter, our people are smarter, you know, all that shit. You talk about that yourself incessantly, and we know. This is their ultimate agenda. Unfortunately, the sporting fields are where we have our balance, because You can play, you belong on the field. But more often than not, that gets negated because they're trying to stop us from even getting on the field, which leads to a whole other bunch of, I guess, explanations that would defy logic and all the other things in trying to sort this crap out.
Well, you know, when you take time to look at this whole thing, the scenario of team, you know, go back and look at what some of our coaches have done using the team concept and how their players and how their assistant coaches. I mean, I talked to a young man, an older gentleman, and he talked about how he got calls from former players that he hadn't seen in 30 years. And out of the blue, they call him. And he said, you know, you don't know how that makes me feel because I know I did something right. And then you go back and talk to some of those players and they talk about, I mean, I use Big House as an example. Do you realize Stephen A. turned in probably as many papers to Big House as he did his instructors? And there were several of his papers that got turned into Big House before they went to his instructor. And he got it handed back to him. You know, he had to hold his hands together to hold it because he tore it up. And this is before we had WordPerfect and Word and whatnot. So you could he had to retype these things from scratch. But House would tell you quick, don't turn that into nobody and say, you know me. Don't turn that into nobody, you on my team. You see, team concept went far beyond that. We had a funeral about 2 weeks ago for a young man who was on the football team. And 30-some of his teammates came from across the country to his funeral. During the time he was sick, some of these same guys were going back and forth visiting him, you know. And he lived in an out-of-the-way place. And see, those are the concepts. I mean, I enjoy seeing Serena and her sister and Tiger and whoever else play those individual games. I mean, that's cool. I love it. At the same time, though, the real thing, you look at Serena and her sister and Venus, you know, they have an advantage of being sisters. But
right.
What if they weren't? Mm-hmm. You know, what about the young lady who was of Korean descent? And there's this other young lady I saw the other day.
Osaka?
Who was really
Japanese.
She was real good. But see, you know, they don't have. There's a disadvantage of being out there by yourself and knowing you got to kick ass every time.
Right.
But it's okay. But then there's the whole thing of team. You know, your team is as strong as its weakest player. And a lot of times, the weakest player may not be skilled in a certain area, but then he's the one who keeps everybody up. He's a valuable asset to that portion of the team. And see, that's what's missing. And we got kids, you know, we have a minor league baseball team, and I went to a game a few weeks ago. And the thing that you find missing when you're talking about Hank Aaron, you're talking about Willie Mays or whoever you want to name, you know, where's the next one going to come from? I don't know, because I think we have on our team of 25 players, I think we have three, maybe four, who are actually African Americans on the team.
Right.
The Astros just drafted one out of Winston, who he's going to be okay because his mom and daddy got it together. But, you know, he got drafted in a recent draft, and he could be coming here, you know, probably not this year, but next year. And we've already promised to turn the stands red for him, which is easy because that's part of the color scheme. But, you know, when you look at these kids who played at Winston over the last 9 years, and it's a mixed bag from the islands, from Mexico, as well as Native Americans. You know, you name it, we got it. In those 9 years, and those guys came back at the end when they knew the end was coming to the program. Those guys were coming back. So this is what a great job Coach Rich did with the team. But see, there's something to be said for team, and we need to be we got to get more into teaching team concept within our community, because everybody wants to be that Lone Ranger star person. And if you listen to these morons who are commentating on the team, well, Michael this and Michael that, Michael, until you got Scotty, you got Worm, and a couple of other guys out there, including the one that's Curtis coaching now, if you got all those pieces out there, and look how they were able to take away the automatic double and triple team of Michael. Michael, just another Negro scoring 50 points and losing.
There you go.
I think the number, I think his playoff experience before the crew arrived, no matter how good you think he may be, until the crew arrived to help him, his teammates, he was something like 1-11 or 1-12.
That's right. Michael Jordan scored 63 points in a game and lost. So he knew what time it was. But I know we have to condense this because we're on a short leash. We're getting out of here in a couple minutes. I want to bring this to the panel's attention. You know, the McCoy incident really hits hard because you're told, you know, if you're going to work at your job, you know, you work at your job. You really strive to be the best you can be at it. And McCoy was that. And Tampa, even though they were languishing because of bad treatment in the front office and not bad and bad quarterbacking and other things like that, McCoy wasn't the problem. So what do you do when you have an employee that is doing what the fuck they're supposed to do, is actually doing it well, and you treat them like a redheaded stepchild? And this goes beyond sports. I think
all of us,
if we haven't experienced it, somebody we know has experienced it. Okay, Reggie.
In all due respect, Mike, he's a person back there. We've been seeing this dance before, like Shakespeare. Like, the bottom line is, how many times have you trained somebody on the job for your position? How many times have you trained somebody in order to do what you do? I mean, this is what I talk about, oppression. This is what I talk about, reparation. The system is already put in place for a certain group to advance. And when I hear people talk about, well, we don't need affirmative action, well, I remember Bull Connor sicking water and dogs on people all the way to write clothes. I remember George Wallace standing in front of school saying, ain't no niggas coming up in here. In the interest, when it comes to education, education, as the professor always say, read, smoke books, there's always that vital that they always try to stop from us from that nectar of education. So I say, a lot of these young men, when they get into sports and everything, they better have a fallback plan. One thing Steve Harvey said, I told this brief, he said, if you work plan A, don't have a plan B. And I guess he might have made it, but a lot of us, guess what, need a plan B, especially in athletics. And I got to chat to you, professor, and I know time is short, but professor, can you help me with it, please?
Well, in athletics, you the first thing, you need the right plan A. And unfortunately, a lot of them don't have that. You know, think about it. These young men gonna get a butthole full of money, but to put all their eggs in a basket that way, I can't see it. I know exactly what Steve Harvey's talking about, and what he tells you is, okay, you work that plan A to its fullest. If you don't succeed, you get a new plan A. But then, where are they going to go? Because you can't go back to college, not as an athlete. And you need to have a plan A that is so tight, but you got to work your plan A to such a degree that there is no possible way of failing. But then what you have to be mindful of is your shoe might fall apart, and you twist your knee. It's get you, your mama, and 14 other folks in the stands on both sides and both colors. You see that happen, and, you know, you got to be ready for that. And then the good thing in these cases, you know, and I was looking at Stephen A. talk about this too. I didn't watch the draft. I was still sick, so I was trying to get my, be able to hold my head up without throwing stuff all over the floor. But anyway, he talked about the number of fathers in this particular draft that were present, which is a phenom. Unfortunately, not all fathers are like, not like that jerk who got the three sons who can't play. And, you know, you I mean, you know, come on. You got to have certain realities. And if you, you know, one of the things that, Harvey and most other success coaches tell you, one of the things you got to have not only is being bright, you got to have a work ethic. You know, mm-hmm. I told somebody recently what my skill, how my, they said, well, you know, you look like you were asleep. I said, yes, I was. Well, what, you know, what time you get up? I've been up since 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock? I can't believe it. You know, you'd be amazed at what you can get done at 4 o'clock. Because the only thing that bothers me at 4 o'clock in the morning is this bird that's outside my window. Starts singing at 4 o'clock.
That's his job. That's you know, his job. He had the clock at 4 o'clock, and he said, "Let me go
bother Fred." And it's pitch black outside, except for the streetlight. But see, you know, too many people with a plan A and no plan mm-hmm. B think it's all about the shoes, and it ain't the shoes.
Yep.
You know, the good thing about, you know, when you go back and look at what Pearl and Fraser, Barnett and all those cats back in the day. Look at and Willis Reed, you know, look at what they played in. You know,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't the shoes.
Yep.
It was wearing them shoes out. You know.
Well,
it was not having the color coded and all that. It was wearing them things out. It was a sweat equity that you put in that most of these clowns now don't even understand. They don't want to do it.
That's what I'm talking about.
Out there.
That's what I'm talking about. Fred, we gotta put a lid on that because we are getting ready to get our asses out the door, but that's a nice way to wrap it up for now. We are going to go further on with this discourse at 4 o'clock on the Gray Leopard Cove. As Big G will set it up for us and let us know what we can find happening at the top of the hour. G, tell us what's up.
I'm not going to talk about the Alameda County court system and the Toronto president may be getting arrested and may be arrested here as the Oakland police force is going to go out together.
Yes. All right. And in the music box tomorrow?
Yeah, it's the Blue Magic.
No three-ring circus, baby. So, yes, at the top of the hour, the Gray Leopard Cove. We will continue to talk about Toronto Raptors executive who got stupid on him by the local constabulary, maybe an international incident brewing. And Sunday, the music box, Blue Magic, featured guests. Y'all know you got to sit back, kick back, and relax. So we'll see you at 4, tomorrow at 7, before the music therapy mindstream kicks off. Thank you, G. Fred, give us something to go with. Shameless plug and take us out.
Well, although I was sick of the dog on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week, I did receive my first shipment of Bear Tracks Under the Maples and Oaks, which is the history of Livingston College. Livingston College Athletics, and I'm somewhat vertical now, so that I can
mm-hmm.
get those out to those people who ordered them already, and then can go to www.blackheritageview, print out a, right now you'd have to print out order form, but it still works, and you can place your order at www.blackheritageview.com, and also we're on Facebook. And that under that same name in the HBCU Area Center.
Cool. All right, gentlemen. www.blackheritageview.com. Buy books, t-shirts. Any day is a good day to put some black history on your coffee table, nightstand, by the bed. Reading is fundamental. Reggie, you get last lick
yes,
today.
Sir.
Give us something to think about.
Yep, against the wall.
I know you're getting smart real quick, but Professor, I'm going to email you two books I'm going to try to get from you. The History of the CIAA, one of them, and deliver to the commissioner during football media day. So I want to make sure she gets a little history lesson in the past. Not that she don't know it, but still, you know, it's always good updates. So I'll give it to you soon, Professor. Today, in the Capital Confederacy of White Strength and Racism, Arthur Ashe finally got his name on the Arthur Ashe Boulevard. They did that today as a big ceremony. So if you Google that, you see how the dignitaries and Negroes came down. There's only one problem. Them damn statues of Confederate soldiers are still standing around. Even some of them pieces of trash out there in their Confederate gear. Some things never change. Just food for thought.
There you go. Short and sweet. We will see you tomorrow evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, for the Music Therapy Mind Stream on behalf of all the chefs. And happy birthday to my youngest, Deborah Lillian. Love you, Eggy, even though your mother's a nut job. Have a great day, everybody. Great weekend. Love you. Ciao for now.
You know, we're dealing with a very critical and crucial time. Most crucial and critical times that I've ever witnessed, being as young as I am, you know. We all don't want to say nothing else, so we say as young as we are. Now I want to talk about the pronunciation and the realization. Now the educators, they call it ESP, positive thinking, right? Some of the people on the cross other side of the pond call it vibe, vibration.